had had to speak today, given 2 minutes, what would you have lifted up regarding change this past year, change in your heart, your attitude, your actions, your behavior? What are you doing differently? Where have you gained confidence? Have a different experience of witness? And where do you see hope? Because it's not a static scenario. I think roughly since the killing of Trayvon Martin in 2014, our sense of language around racial justice in the country has increased. We've found language to put around misguided assumptions. We talk about implicit bias, cultural norms. We talk about white privilege, and I think often we sort of get it. We also talk, as Philip mentioned, about some of the lynchings and some of the places of the legacy of trauma. Things that pass on from generation to generation in the stories of different families. And I think what we've done a lot in the past year is we have educated ourselves. And Martin Luther King did believe in having a strong ideological framework. He believed that you needed to understand why you were taking actions. He cited the same faulty beliefs then that we are talking about now about racial inferiority. He believed in legislative tools. He fought for them. His point was that correct theory was a basis. It was one leg of the stool, but it wasn't all of it. As I mentioned, back in 1966, Martin Luther King was the keynote speaker at one of the General Assemblies for the Unitarian Universalists. One of the quotes he noted here, and I'm going to use the word church, but here think broad church. Just think that sort of broadly, not just you use. And he knew he was talking to a pretty progressive audience. He said, "It's not enough for the church to work in the ideological realm and to clear up misguided ideas. To remain awake through this social revolution, the church must engage in strong action programs to get rid of the last vestiges of segregation and discrimination." I think he also knew that this was going to be lifelong work. This is not something that you solve per se, but that you keep molding and shaping and you come up with different rules. You can get stuck if you use the same rules over and over again. He went on further in that lecture to note that the schools were still segregated and poverty was still a deep challenge. Sue shared that with us today, but maybe it's different people that are in poverty at different points. Again, it's not static. Back in 1966, at the lecture, he observed, "A second myth that we must deal with is that of exaggerated progress. Certainly, we have made progress in race relations, and I think we can all glory in that things are better today than they were 10 years ago or even 3 years ago. We should be proud of the steps we've made to rid our nation of the great evil of racial segregation and discrimination. On the other hand, we must realize the plant of freedom is only a bud and not yet a flower. The Negro is freer in 1966, but he is not free. The Negro knows more dignity today than he has known in any period of his history in this country, but he is not yet equal. There are still stubborn, difficult problems to deal with all over the country." So that was 1966. And those were King's understandings. I bring us forward to 2020 and a study that was just done recently by Newsday. Some of you may have seen it was in the New York Times and a couple other magazines. This was on real estate. I don't know, did anybody else see this article? It was out about a month or two ago. Basically what they did is over a couple of years, they sent actors, white and black actors, they literally went to the same real estate agent in the same market when the same houses were on the market. The candidates had profiles that had the same income, the same credit scores, the same interest in certain real estate. And 50% or 49% of the time, the black testers experienced different treatment, not positive. They were not shown the same homes in white neighborhoods, what were perceived as white neighborhoods. Similarly, the white folks were not shown some of the neighborhoods that they didn't think they'd be interested in. It was also true for the Hispanic and the Asian testers. These tests were done last year. I take this as a blatant example of what the systemic part of racism is. It takes a whole confluence of realities. Keep going back to those Jenga blocks. It takes lots and lots of assumptions for some real estate agent to think that was a good way to do his or her job. This congregation has said, you will not look away. There's not going to be a bingo magic answer fix. We know that. And as we've gathered time after time, I looked back on some notes. There was a group when we were doing the book White Fragility last year. For those who weren't here, white fragility basically says one of the things that gets in the way is white folks start focusing on themselves instead of the broader problem. They focus on their own parts and complicit nature. And I think that has to be done. I think it's a really important part of the work. But white fragility says we sometimes let that get in the way of dismantling systems and to be aware of it. When are you centering the white voice over the folks that are experiencing the disparity? Well, that night, we had slowed the conversation down. We're sitting in the room over there, and the room was crowded. If you haven't been to the sessions, we have had good turnouts. And here's the systems we listed locally that we can imagine could be better from a racial equity perspective. The legal and judicial system, schools and education, businesses, real estate, banking, churches, licensing, including getting driver's licenses, media, healthcare. So I think we're called to ask, what is it going to keep taking to dismantle racism? Where are we continuing to reinforce various stereotypes? So part of, I think, what we've learned is we do the work of identity formation. We do know that we need to get smarter and to understand ourselves and our own reactions. And then we need to take it out into the community. And I think Philip gave us beautiful examples that are real right here in Kent County of how folks are going out. And people are debating, should we do the lynching project, not do the lynching project? As Marilee said, it will not be comfortable. There is not going to be a group that says, great, we've got the perfect solution. But I think the deeper we've worked on our own roots, the deeper we've read and understood and watched movies and read voices from various places, the more solid we're going to be when it comes to action. I think we've learned over the course of the year about facilitation and listening. What conversations do we let continue, and when do we have to sometimes interrupt conversations when facts are wrong over and over? These are skill sets, and as we've gone on this whirlwind of learning, your witness has been powerful. I hear from Carol a journey through anger and a commitment to a process which names healing as foundational. Some of us, not we can't all do it all, but some of us can see the pain and think about how we respond. I hear from Philip that we're moving in directions as a community and seeing conversations with the state's attorney general that are meaningful. Where are we consistent and sustained in our actions? Where do we find hope there? And I hear from Bob, his last sentence. I've started to learn that I can change. I don't have to stay in that space. For those who were at the sessions last year, one of the things we had up in the wall for all the white fragility discussions, I think we had four of them total, we kept a quote from James Baldwin. Some of you may remember this one. The quote is, any real change implies the breakup of the world as one has always known it. The loss of all that gave one identity, the end of safety. So as you hit Martin Luther King Day in 2020, where do you see systems changing? And do you believe those systems are all affecting you? Every year we read a network of mutuality. When we read that responsive reading, do you hear it differently year to year? Do you hear your destiny tied to a wider destiny, tied to a wider destiny? Can you see that as we pull out different pieces, the tower is not going to stand? I think that's our call, and our call is not to hear that with guilt and shame and bad feelings, but with the hope in a process that over time imagines a different world, that's not that fragile tower, but that has a different base, that is built with creative minds in a way that we have not yet seen. You sense hearts stretching. What will we ask next year at this service? Will you be ready to be one of our 2-minute speakers? So my hope is that we go forward and trust in the process, trust in the differences that are being made right here in this community, the relationships that are being built, and the ways that we are each being changed each time we walk back out in the world with a new idea. May it be so. We bless and be.